Again, back to Dennis Kijai for bringing me nice warm water. As you know, the three doshas, Kapavita, Vayu. So I'm mostly Vayu air, and the air goes out of balance very easily. So warm water is good for clearing the throat before speaking. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayamudhiryat. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer respectful obeisances unto the personality of God and Lord Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, who is the translator, commentator, and our spiritual master. Nashta Prayeshu Padreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. By regularly attending the Srimad Bhagavatam class and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, who is worshipped with transcendental songs, becomes established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, we're continuing a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the fifth canto, chapter 14. Force of material enjoyment, and today's verse is the last verse of the chapter. Yes, text 46. Yeah, last verse of the chapter. Now, it's a long prose verse, that's why it's not on the board, so I'll just read it myself and then we'll jump to the translation. Yairang Bhagavata Sabhajita Vadata Guna Karmano Rajarsher Bharatyasya nu charitam svasjayanam ayushyam tanam yasyasyam swargya pavargyam vanushino chakyasya chabinandati chasarva eva shisha atmana ashaste na kanchana parata iti. So, Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Devotees interested in hearing and chanting shravanam kirtanam regularly discuss the pure characteristics of Bharata Maharaj and praise his activities. If one submissively hears and chants about the all-auspicious Maharaj Bharata, one's lifespan and material opulences certainly increase. One can become very famous and easily attain promotion to the heavenly planets, or attain liberation by merging into the existence of the Lord. Whatever one desires can be attained simply by hearing, chanting, and glorifying the activities of Maharaj Bharata. In this way, one can fulfill all his material and spiritual desires. One does not have to ask anyone else for these things, for simply by studying the life of Maharaj Bharata, one can attain all desirable things. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The forest of material existence is summarized in this 14th chapter. The word bhavatavi refers to the path of material existence. The merchant is the living entity who comes to the forest of material existence to try to make money for sense gratification. The six plunderers are the senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, touch, and mind. The bad leader is diverted intelligence. Intelligence is meant for Krishna consciousness, but due to material existence, we divert all our intelligence to achieve material facilities. Everything belongs to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but due to our perverted mind and senses, we plunder the property of the Lord and engage in satisfying our senses. The jackals and tigers in the forest are our family members. And the herbs and creepers are our material desires. The mountain cave is our happy home. And the mosquitoes and serpents are our enemies. The rats, beasts, and vultures are different types of thieves who take away our possessions. And the Gandharva Pura is the phantasmagoria of the body and home. The will-o'-the-wisp is our attraction for gold and its color. And material residence and wealth are the ingredients for our material enjoyment. The whirlwind is our attraction for our wife. And the dust storm is our blinding passion experienced during sex. The demigods control the different directions. And the cricket is the harsh word spoken by our enemy during our absence. The owl is the person who directly insults us. And the impious trees are impious men. The waterless river represents atheists who give us trouble in this world and the next. The meat-eating demons are the government officials, and the pricking thorns are the impediments of material life. This is quite a list, but we're meant to meditate on this. So, the little taste experience in sex is our desire to enjoy another's wife, and the flies are the guardians of women, like the husband, father-in-law, mother-in-law, and so forth. The creeper itself is women in general. The lion is the wheel of time, and the herons, crows, and vultures are so-called demigods, pseudo-swamis, yogis, and incarnations. All these are too insignificant to give one relief. The swans are the perfect brahmanas, and the monkeys are the extravagant shudras engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The trees of the monkeys are our households, and the elephant is ultimate death. Thus, all the constituents of material existence are described in this chapter. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Material World as the Great Forest of Enjoyment. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimante Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Srinivani Pachachade Sharine Om Agyana Tamirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtang Stapitang Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeyahang Shri Guru Shri Utapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishavangsha Shri Rupam Sagadatam Sahagana Raganatan Vatam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sayatam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vatang Shat Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishamanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kompaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dittananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudhi Gauravatarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So you're very fortunate. You have, well, do you have the complete Srimad Bhagavatam in your language? Several creations. And English also. Most of you speak English, so you can read it in English. So, no problem. But I was very fortunate to be invited to participate in producing Prabhupada's books. First, when it was ISKCON Press, and then later on became Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. As a third-year college student, just finished my third year, I joined a movement. And in those days, if you were a little bit sane and a little bit intelligent, after a couple of weeks, they said, well, why aren't you moving in already? Come on, join the movement. So it didn't take long for me to move in. And my first service, living in the Henry Street Temple, which was a 5-story townhouse, actually it was double townhouses, it was formerly a convent. Catholic nuns were living there. But like many of the Christian institutions of that time, they were not being used properly, so they might wind up selling a lot of their property. So literally all across America we bought, and even in Canada, we bought former churches and they became Krishna temples. So anyway, this was a temple. So in the Brahmacharya Ashram, it's not like nowadays, you have a few men living in big space, especially in Los Angeles. I don't know about what your situation is here, but in LA, you have like two brahmacharis living in a big room. In those days, it was about 100 brahmacharis living in a room this size. So we were sleeping like sardines next to each other. You know. So my first service, literally, upon moving into the ashram, was to clean the stool rooms. So they were like, you know, obviously the women had their own floor, but on our floor, the men's floor, that was a heavy job because, you know, you had a lot of men living together in a small bathroom. I think there were like 4 toilets and 2 showers. So my first service was cleaning that. So I vividly remember, you know, I was thinking. But then I realized, you know, that you surrender means you have to surrender to whatever order comes down in the cyclic succession. That is the motivation for being part of an organization like this. Now we take it for granted that Krishna is the complete controller, ultimate controller, and he's overseeing everything. So whatever order is coming down, as long as it's not violating any of our principles, you know, if the temple president asks you to go buy a hamburger, you tell him to go to hell. But any other order that's coming down that is not violating our principles, in other words, you may be a big, big Sankirtan devotee, but if the order comes down, I want you to become a temple president or clean the kitchen or whatever, we're not in this organization standing on Varna and Ashram. Obviously, we should be guided by that because it's stated that you're not a human being until you accept Varna and Ashram. So yes, we must be Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. We must eventually decide on the Varna. Am I a Brahmana, Kshatriya, you know, Vaishya, Shudra? But we're not totally governed by that. The Vaishnava community is governed by the order of the spiritual master. So you may be a Brahmana, and if you're asked to sweep the floor, you can't think, hey, I'm a Brahmana, that's Shudra work. No, we don't think like that. Whatever the order comes down, that's what we do. So if the spiritual master wants to clean the temple, you clean the temple. If the spiritual master wants you to go out and distribute books, you do that. Even if it may not be matching with your psychophysical nature. Which, in my case, it didn't. I didn't, you know, it's funny. I'm a very gregarious person. I like to interact, but at the same time, very much a loner at heart. So it was not so easy to approach people and try to get them to buy books. But even though I was eventually working in the book trust, in the ISKCON press. And it started because one day while I was doing my duty of cleaning Jayadvaita Das Brahmachari, who is now Jayadvaita Swami, he came to me and said, we have heard that you know something about computers. And in those days, computers meant mainframe computers, you know, big. He said, we're getting ready to computerize the book production, so would you like to be involved? Yes, yes, of course. So that's how I got involved. And But even though we were doing the very important service of producing Prabhupada's books, we still had to go out. Every day we went out on Harinam, and then many times we had to go out and try to distribute Prabhupada's books, which again for me was a little bit of a leap. It was not something I was used to. I was used to hanging out with people for sense gratification. You know, what is the best type of intoxicant or the best party to go to, you know, like that. Not for trying to get them to buy books. Even though I was an avid reader myself and read a lot of esoteric so-called spiritual books before Prabhupada's books, but still. My point is that you are part of a Vaishnava community and therefore we have to act accordingly. We're not part of a necessarily Varna Ashram community. If you notice, Prabhupada did not immediately try to institute Varna and Ashram. The idea was we are carrying out the order of our spiritual master and in that manner, I am asking you to do such and such and such. So whatever Prabhupada asked, for instance, Prabhupada asked the devotees to start publishing his Back to Godhead magazine, which he had personally started back in India. So in that regard, they bought, in those days, this was in the 60s, what's called a mimeograph machine, which is a very rudimentary type of press. You have an original that was typewritten, and then there were carbon copies of it. And then there was a hand crank machine to make more and more and more and more copies. So, in the beginning, The devotee said, "But Prabhupada, we don't know anything about publishing." He said, "Just rely on Krishna. Do it." He said, "So sometimes we get put in such a situation. Like, you may be asked to go and open a temple somewhere and you never had any such experience. But Prabhupada said, in those kinds of circumstances, just rely on Krishna. Krishna is the Lord of the heart and He's our well-wisher. Even in other religious traditions, they have this idea that God is all good, which is a fact. If everything is God's energy, why would He be inimical to any part of His energy? And Krishna directly states that in the Bhagavad Gita, Samohang sarvabhuteshu name dveshu stina priya. Yeah, yeva janti tamam bhaktya mayite teshu chapyam. Krishna says, I envy no one, nor am I especially friendly to anyone. I'm equal to all. But if you approach me in a service attitude, you want to serve me, then I'm your friend and you're a friend to me. That's Krishna's declaration in the Bhagavad Gita. So again, it's quite understandable. If everything emanates from God, including the living entities, why would it be inimical to anyone part of it? It's like you being inimical to one of your fingers. It doesn't make sense. You're equally kind to all parts of the body. Even though, in terms of importance, you may give more importance to your head than to one little finger, but still, you don't want anything to happen to that little finger. And if something does happen to that little finger, it gets smashed in some way, it becomes such a center of your attention. You want it to get back to normal. See? So it's like that. We're like the smashed finger right now in the material world. And Krishna wants us to come back to normal. Normal state of consciousness. I mean, seeing Him in the right way and seeing our relationship in the right way and acting in the right way. So this chapter that we just finished, the 14th chapter, the reason why I brought this up is because you're very fortunate you have the complete Bhagavatam, you can see. But we didn't have it at that time. Even in 73 when I joined, Bhagavatam was not complete. So by 75, Prabhupada, you know, as you know, he stopped everything and his translation said, I'm not going to translate anymore till you catch up. So I happened to be fortunate enough to be part of that crew that produced 17 volumes in 2 months. So there were 15 volumes of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and 2 volumes of this fifth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. So at that time, like I said, I was a computer, I had some experience. We set up from mainframe had been reduced to what's called a mini computer. Now we have microcomputers that are in everything, but a mini computer was about the size of a big refrigerator. So I used to program the mini computer, and the mini computer was used to drive a typesetting machine. And it was photo typesetting. In other words, it was photographically exposed on a long continuous roll of photographic paper. And the odd thing about it is that when you put that roll of paper that was exposed into the processing machine, it came out backwards. In other words, the last thing that went in came out first. That's called LIFO, L-I-F-O, last in, first out. That's compared to like a laundry basket. The last thing you put in is the first thing that you take out. Whereas a pipe is first in, first out. Whatever goes into a pipe first comes out first at the other end. So this typesetting equipment was last in, first out. So I, as the person running the equipment, had the privilege of reading things as they came out, but backwards. You understand? So I was reading like this chapter. I would be reading the last verse first and going on. But we were very eager to read anything that Prabhupada produced because we didn't have, you know, a full set of Bhagavatam to sit down and read. So nowadays we're very fortunate. We have our iPads, the entire, not just the Bhagavatam, but everything is here. And you can travel, and so there's no excuse for you, younger generation, to not read Prabhupada's books. Everywhere you go, on your iPhone, on your iPad, you can sit down anywhere. Not only read all of Prabhupada's books, but listen to all the lectures, everything you can carry on one little device. So really, you have absolutely no excuse to allow yourself to be distracted by anything in this forest of material enjoyment. Now, one of the mistakes that some devotees made when reading this chapter, they immediately started looking at their spouses like, you're a jackal. You're this, you're that. No. We're all male and female, which means two things from my understanding of Prabhupada's conversation that day. Don't chase the devotees for sense gratification. We should not see Krishna's servants as being our servants. Yes, there may be a hierarchy, parent, child, you know, temple president, like that. But ultimately, we're not seeing each other as objects of sense gratification. And the second part is, don't chase the devotees away by your misbehavior. You see, you may be so disappointed in somebody and you want to show them how disappointed. No, it's not your movement. It's Lord Chaitanya's movement. You see, it's Srila Prabhupada's movement. So we have to try to take up their mood. Lord Chaitanya was very, very tolerant, even of Jagai and Madai. Why? Because they agreed to follow the principles and try to become Vaishnavas. He wanted to kill them because they injured Nityananda. But Nityananda said, no, 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 my lord, if you kill them, then you have to kill everybody, because practically everybody in this age dies. He points it out to Kijai. You should go into Kijai. In this age of Kali, practically everybody is Jagai Madai. Meaning, not following any principles, sense gratification to the max, even if it means stealing, killing, whatever it meant, they wanted their intoxication and their sense gratification. So Lord Chaitanya was ready to kill them, but because they agreed, they submitted themselves at his lotus feet and agreed to follow the principles, chant Hare Krishna, then he accepted them. So we should be in that mood also. Just imagine, when we go out and chant on the streets, we're so happy if somebody says Hare Krishna. Ah, he said Hare Krishna. But then we come back home and we're devotees are chanting Hare Krishna all the time and we can't stand them. It doesn't make sense. If we're so happy when somebody says Hare Krishna one time, we should be extremely happy with somebody who's chanting Hare Krishna every day. You see? But because we have our conception of what somebody else should be like, and they don't measure up to what we think they should be like, then we get upset with them. That's ludicrous. If you want to work on somebody, work on yourself. See, that much we should do. Work on ourselves. And everybody else, yes, we may be in a position where we have to give instruction. As temple president, as GBC, as guru, as father, mother. But we can't get upset. Lord Rishabhdev deals with this in the Bhagavatam. Lord Rishabhdev, when he's instructing his sons, he says that the king, the guru, and the father should give good instructions to the citizen, the disciple, and the son, or daughter, offspring. But if the citizen, the disciple, or the offspring don't perfectly follow the instructions, don't get angry, just go on giving the instructions. And the best instruction we can give is our own personal example. As I was saying a few nights ago, and the typical materialistic way of raising children is to do as I say, not as I do. See? So the parents maybe have all kinds of bad habits, but they're telling the children, don't do that. It doesn't work. Most part, it doesn't work. The children see what you do and they're going to try to act like you. So in our society, acharya, and we're all meant to become acharyas, means one who leads by example. Don't expect others to do things that you're not doing. So if I'm not perfect in my service, why should I expect somebody else to be perfect in their service? Let me work on perfecting my service. And therefore Krishna says in the Gita, it's better to do your own service imperfectly than to try to do somebody else's service perfectly. See? Concentrate, in other words, on what you've been given, no matter how simple. If you're given a task, and our line is, you learn not by figuring things out, you learn by hearing. So even if you're given the simplest task to do, clean the temple room, find out who was cleaning it before you and ask them exactly where is everything kept, what am I supposed to do, how do I do it, like that. What to speak of more complex tasks, what to speak of cooking. We're not supposed to be, we're not supposed to be inventors in the kitchen. We have so many devotees before us who have made khichdi, who have made halava, who have made, learn from them. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. That's not our society. Our society is not one of the karmis. They want to reinvent the wheel so they can be glorified. Ah, he made a better wheel. You see? But we're not into personal glorification. We live by the satisfaction of the superior, of the guru, of Krishna ultimately. So in order to satisfy the superior, we want to do things properly. And to do things properly, we want to learn from someone who has already done it properly. See? So whether it's cleaning or cooking or book distribution or whatever. And that's why Prabhupada said, he told Yamuna Devi, and we have her cookbook. When it goes to cooking, you don't even have to search anywhere. Just open Yamuna's cookbook and learn from her. But he told Yamuna, he asked her, are you teaching the other devotees how to cook? Because she became celebrated as a good cook. And Prabhupada said, whatever you know, you should teach others, otherwise you'll become envious. See, this is a mature mentality. I know something and I get all kinds of accolades as a big, big teacher of this or that. And I don't want to teach anybody unless I'm getting something out of it. Otherwise, leave me alone. But the devotee mentality is not like that. As soon as you learn something, you want to teach it to others, and that reinforces your knowledge. You see? So whatever you learn, and in Krishna consciousness, we know Yukta Vairagya. It could be anything. It could be how to run the computer or how to run the sound system. That may seem mundane, but it's important. If somebody's not here every day to run the sound system properly, it's a disturbance, isn't it? So if you know how to run the sound system properly, teach somebody else how to do it. How to put on the Govindam prayers, how to make, what level the microphone. In our New Dwarka temple, we have a big sound closet with lots of equipment. And everything is marked precisely where it should be. So you don't have to guess. And you can tell right away if something is, if it doesn't sound right, you go to the closet, you see, okay, this thing should be here. Somebody moved it over there. So that's another way of teaching. It's kind of indirect way of teaching, but so whatever we know, we should be willing to teach others. And that way, the service goes on nicely. Not that, you know, I'm doing something nicely and then I go away for 2 weeks and everything falls apart. So they can know that I'm not there. How important I am. When I'm not around, things fall apart. No. If we're really doing it for the right reason, for glorification of a Guru and Krishna, then if I'm going away for 2 weeks, I want somebody to know what I'm doing so that things don't deteriorate while I'm gone. So whatever it is, and we see in Prabhupada's case, for instance, Prabhupada always had a personal servant and a secretary, and it changed from time to time. So one of the duties of the outgoing servant was to train the new servant properly, so they knew exactly what to do, and Prabhupada's service was not interrupted unnecessarily. Same thing with the secretary. The secretary had to be trained by the outgoing secretary, so the new one would know exactly what to do, how to do Prabhupada's correspondence, and when to do what. So if we're taking things seriously in our service to Guru and Krishna, then we should have this mentality. I should first of all want to learn properly, and then I become qualified to teach properly. If I didn't learn nicely from my predecessor, then what am I going to teach? That means I'm teaching speculation, and we don't want that. We don't want a speculative approach to devotional service. Devotional service should be continued nicely, handed down, and then passed on, just like the knowledge. We're very fortunate that we have knowledge that has been handed down in this particular sampradaya, so we're very confident that we're getting exactly the meaning, just like it was being, we read this morning in Chaitanya, in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that the Vedic knowledge is meant for three things. For understanding our relationship with God, for acting on that understanding, and ultimately for coming to the perfectional stage of love of Godhead. So if we really want to reawaken our love for God, then we will follow properly and strictly the instructions that come down in the Supta succession. And that way, our own success is guaranteed, and the success of the movement as a whole will be guaranteed. And this movement is meant to go on. It's not, at least for the next 10,000 years, the golden years in the Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga isn't, I mean, you're reading the books. Seven. And what is the unique feature? Each layer is 10 times thicker than the previous one. See? So you're not going to break out of this on your own. But by the mercy of the spiritual master, the creeper grows and breaks through those layers and goes all the way to Goloka Vrindavan and takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. So that's what we're hoping for every day when we're chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We're watering and begging for the mercy. And that mercy is given to us in the form of devotional service. So when opportunities to serve come, we shouldn't run away from it. That's what we're praying for. We're praying to Krishna and Radharani, please give me service. And then the service opportunity comes in, I don't have any time. No, then we have not understood. If we can't increase the volume of service that we do, then we should at least try to increase the quality of the service that we're doing. See, whatever service it is, again, we have to be concerned. Prabhupada said, devotional service means concentrate on what have you been given. When I joined in Henry Street, one of the first things they told us, because we all had to help cutting up vegetables. There were so many devotees living there. It was a big deal every day to prepare prasadam. So anybody who was available had to. So they warned us very strictly. First of all, they were very particular. When you cut a potato, kumpir, it had to be exactly the right size. You know, they were very particular. So that everything cooks, the explanation is that things will cook thoroughly, nicely, if everything is the right size. And then the next thing they said is, concentrate, we don't want your blood in Krishna's subject. So, whatever service you're given, you have to concentrate. Just like as if you have a knife, you have to concentrate. Whether it's cleaning, or preaching, or distributing books, or whatever it is we're doing, concentrate, concentrate. And that's what keeps us Krishna conscious. Otherwise, if I'm chanting, but I'm allowing my mind to go everywhere and everywhere, we're chanting downtown and you're window shopping while you're chanting. That's not good. So chant with concentration, japa. Chant with concentration when we go out on Harinam. And that just keeps everything going forward. Spiritual life means ever-increasing happiness, ever-increasing everything, ever-increasing. That's spiritual. Material always decreases, decreases, decreases. Until one day, there's no more oil, or there's no more whatever. Eventually in Kali Yuga, as we know, if you've read the 12th Canto, no more sugar, no more vegetables, nothing. The only thing left is flesh. So they'll be killing even their own offspring just to eat. That's how horrible it's going to become. After 427,000 more years. We've already passed 5,000 out of 432,000. So now we're not in such difficulty. We have nice veggies and nice ahimsa milk and, you know, so we should concentrate and try to get out now. Don't put it off for coming back later, because things just get worse and worse in the Kali Yuga. All right, we'll stop here. So there's maybe a question or two before we leave. Yes, show the dual all per boom. No gambling? Is that clear what that means?
No, you said like, that if we want more than Krishna.
Yes, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's pretty obvious. Gambling means taking whatever has been given to you as your just reward for this lifetime. Everybody's karma is different. It's not because we're all chanting Hare Krishna and we have the same karma. No. So based on previous karma, you've been put in a situation, a particular set of parents, particular set of opportunities for education, money, etc., etc. So whatever we've been given, some have been given more, some less. We're not all Ambarish, obviously. You know, by his karma, he's inherited millions and millions and millions of dollars. Most of us, we're lucky if we get, you know, a few euros. But whatever it is, has been given. Gambling means taking what you've been given, what is your quota for this lifetime, and throwing it away for an opportunity to make more easily. You see? It's sinful. Because the majority of people who gamble, they don't win. So they're putting themselves in a worse situation. You start out with an income of 5,000 euros or whatever you're making, and now you're gambling some of that away trying to become a millionaire. And generally speaking, you become less well off because you've lost those 5,000 euros and now you're going crazy. To the point where you might even want to rob a bank or something. And people, that's what makes people do things like that. They've thrown away what they had, and now they're desperate, so they do something even more foolish. One devotee, or trying to be a devotee, was a bhakta at the time. This is in San Diego in the early 90s. He was trying to impress his wife. He had married this woman, new devotee. She was also a new devotee. He had married her, and she had a college degree, and she had a good job. And he was not very educated, so he was trying to impress her by getting money. So unfortunately, he decided to try robbing banks. You see, mode of ignorance, obviously. And so he successfully robbed a couple of banks, and I think on the third try, he got caught. So no more easy money, no more any money. Now you're doing hard time in prison. So, and of course, she divorced him and married some other more intelligent devotee. So, yeah, gambling is not good. Krishna's given you, by your karma, you've gotten a certain amount. Whatever amount Krishna gives you, you should use it in the service. So if you are making 5,000 euros and you're using whatever you need for your maintenance and the rest you're using in Krishna service, then that's glorious. Much more glorious than the guy who's making $5 million or €5 million and he's not giving anything to Krishna. He thinks this is all just mythology and he wants nothing to do with it. So you're better off being poor and using everything in Krishna service than being rich and not using anything in Krishna service. Okay? Jai, Granth Rachimi Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.